a very good afternoon to you. It's 12:07, and this is Midday Matters Financial Focus here on 89.1 FM. I'm your host, Sean Beter. Very happy to be with you once again today. I've been in the studio most of the day. It is our fall fun drive, but glad to be back on my own show, Midday Matters, along with Susan Burns.
Yes, indeed. Glad to be here. And we have not only a Pledge Tuesday, but we're going with a Tech Tuesday theme today, Sean, and we've got a couple valuable guests that are going to walk us through some issues related to copyright law.
And we'll introduce them in just a moment here, but on this business edition of our program, we have some business of our own to take care of.
We do indeed.
It is, in fact, our fall fun drive, and this is the time where we come to you and ask you to put a dollar value on this program. If you're a regular listener to Midday Matters or to NIPR in general, chip in a few dollars if you can afford it, and give us a call, 260-452-1185, or you can always pledge online at our website. It's NIPR.FM. We're looking for six pledges this hour and $600. We did, in fact, meet our goal yesterday, thanks to those who pledged their support yesterday.
Great.
Now we have a new one.
We have Tuesday listeners that we're appealing to.
The Tuesday listeners will make all the difference this hour. Once again, 260-452-1185 or NIPR.FM. And Susan, you put in an awful lot of work every week to help put this show together. For those who don't know, Susan is kind of a primary producer of this Tuesday edition of our program. Why do you give so much time to public radio?
It matters to me, really, is the easiest way to put it. First of all, I love the fact that this station is a way to connect with the community. And so I see that producing side of things as a way to reach out to people that I know have some specific knowledge that I think other people might like to learn from them. And we just have so many people in Northeast Indiana who either have a unique expertise or a body of knowledge maybe the people might not be able to connect with if we didn't have this radio show to bring them to you. So it's just a really lot of fun for me to be able to make this contribution to the station to bring talent to your ears.
And I think that's something we don't mention enough, is as much fun as it is for our listeners to tune in and to maybe hear something new or learn something new, it's a heck of a lot of fun for us here too.
Oh, yeah.
It is a lot of work, and you know, bringing these programs to our listeners does not come cheap, and that's why we come to you twice a year to ask for your support. So please do help us get to our goal of six pledges and $600 this hour. The number, one more time, it's 260-452-1185 or NIPR.FM. And that number actually happens to be our line if you want to join the conversation today as well. You can also email middaymatters@NIPR.FM, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet. And Susan, why don't you, let's move on to the program and introduce our guests.
I'll be glad to, because listening to the last hour, we had all that wonderful discussion about doctors. We could also call this Professional Tuesday, because we have one of my favorite lawyers in town, Tom Herr, who's
Thanks,
a partner
Susan.
With Barrett and McNagney. And Tom has a special background in copyright law, right, Tom?
I married an artist, so out of necessity, I became a copyright lawyer.
And then another favorite for Tuesdays for people dealing with business and the online environment, we have Kevin Mullett from Cirrus ABS back with us. Hi,
Thank
Kevin.
You, Susan.
And so these two guys have been both dealing in their own ways with some issues, and I'm going to kind of turn it over to Kevin and Tom for some discussion back and forth. But Kevin, you've been doing some presentations lately on copyright and how that fits into the internet business environment.
Specifically, we just recently did a seminar where we talked about audio, video, and imagery use, which, includes photography for online marketing. And, you know, I didn't think that the presentation would be complete unless we discussed some of the, you know, the nuances and the pitfalls that happen to businesses and individuals when they're using audio, video, and imagery doing so.
Yeah, and, you know, the radio is an audio environment, but photography can be really tricky, thinking about some of the issues related to that.
Well, there's a lot of misinformation, and there's a lot of there's a lot of people who are willing to bend those, and maybe they don't understand fully. And I think this is where Tom's going to come into play here, what they're opening their business liability up to be. And so, you know, I kind of joked during my presentation, and I'll repeat it here, is, you know, everybody that's listening right now needs to take the image use covenant. And we can actually include other forms as audio and video as well. But
do we have to raise our right hands?
You have to raise your right hand.
Not if you're driving.
But you have to say, "Thou shalt not simply do a Google search to find one's images, nor right-clicketh on an image one likes and call it a day." If you do not agree, then stop listening now. No, don't stop listening. Wait until after.
Well, and this really cuts to kind of a core issue that, you know, has been around for a long time, but it seems to have multiplied in the age of the internet here because of that very free distribution of images, audio, video, all of these properties. You know, there's a culture of co-opting that exists these days.
Absolutely, and there's a misnomer that just because you can see it, that you can use it. And I think that most businesses realize they're not supposed to be doing that, but maybe they are trying. And that's what we really want to get to today, is to empower them to understand if they make at least the effort to realize you just can't simply use any image you want, what can I use, and how what makes the difference? So, you know, a couple of things that Susan, Tom, and I had talked about beforehand is, you know, what is public domain? And what is fair use? And oh, we have this new thing, relatively new since the 80s, or I'm sorry, not 80s, early 2000s, called Creative Commons. And okay, well, how does that play into it, and how does that cover my business, or does it?
And we do want to invite our listeners to join the conversation today. If you have a business, or maybe you just have a question or comment and you're concerned about these issues, give us a call, 260-452-1185. Or you can always post on our Facebook wall. That's facebook.com/Midday Matters. Tweet us at Midday Matters. Or we can always, get in touch with us. I have a little bit of alphabet soup here. You can always get in touch with us toll free. It's 1-800-471-9264. And Tom Herr, let's get to you. And I want to back up just a little bit here. Can you define for us, you know, what a copyright is in the first place?
Sure, Sean. It's I think it's fair to say that, as you identified in your earlier remarks, that the copyright law is, I think, struggling to keep up with the attitudes of society, especially you know, the generations that have come after mine. I think the attitudes towards copying have changed dramatically, and I think solutions like Creative Commons are trying also to provide solutions kind of adjunct to the law, because the law is kind of slow when it comes to keeping up with technology. Copyright is, if you want me to answer your question,
please.
Copyright is the legal term for the rights that one has in connection with anything that's a creative and original work of art, literature. The law, it comes from the Constitution, and then it comes from Congress. Federal law, copyright law, protects those authors and artists who create original works.
Now, when you're talking about copyright and holding copyright, I think a lot of folks think that it's kind of like a patent. You have to file for this kind of protection. As I understand it, though, you generally hold a copyright as soon as you create a work.
That's a common mistake, and you've hit it right on the head, Sean. That is correct. Once you've committed it to some fixed form. Now, copyright doesn't apply to something that's rolling around in your head, but once you've recorded it, written it down, painted it, the copyright laws attach and protect it. You do not need to go to the copyright office to obtain a registration in order to have rights to that work.
So can folks get additional protection if they feel that this might be in danger of being co-opted, their work?
I think the reason you might want to obtain a copyright registration from the Copyright Office would be if you were going to pursue someone for infringement, then you would need a registration. Obviously, companies like NBC and ESPN, they're going to copyright with the Copyright Office everything they do. But as far as an artist goes, I don't think you need to take those steps unless you're going to pursue someone. The website for the Copyright Office is very easy to use. The forms are very easy to fill out. It's not expensive. And I think most people that I deal with can do it on their own, once I point them in the right direction. So it's not hard to obtain a registration.
We're talking about copyright today. The number to join the conversation or to make your pledge of support to public radio, 260-452-1185. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or you can always send us a tweet. It's @middaymatters. Kevin Mullett, I interrupted you there.
No, that's all right. It was my understanding, and that might be part of the problem, but I've heard somewhere that it's like 3 times damages in the state of Indiana if you had actually registered that work as opposed to just relying on without registration.
Well, it's federal copyright law, and it doesn't matter what state you're in.
Okay.
The 3 times damages might come from state law that applies to conversion, where you steal someone's property. Occasionally, you'll see in a copyright action a state law claim for conversion, and that's where you might be getting that. If you do have a registration, which you must have if you're going to file suit, you're entitled to statutory damages, which are, there's a minimum and a maximum. I think it's $500,000 to $150,000 per infringement. Or you can prove actual damages. If your damages are higher than that because you lost some sales or things like that, you can actually prove damages as well.
Right. And my understanding is, too, is that it's a little bit harder to prove, like with some of these, you have an image, it was copied, somebody used it on their Facebook page. It's very difficult to then prove what kind of damages you had received or losses, because if you're not in the business of being a photographer where you have a set rate for that image use, as in like stock image use or something like that, what would that be based on?
Right, and that's why Congress came up with, sometimes Congress does things correctly, and that's why they came up with their statutory damages.
If you say so, Tom.
It's an old law.
We're coming up on 20 minutes past the hour, and we do need to take a quick break, and we'll get back to this conversation on copyright on today's Midday Matters Financial Focus. Do you want to take a quick break here and just say that this is our fall fund drive, and we need your financial support to keep informative programming like Midday Matters and keep local voices like the ones that you hear today on our airwaves. We're looking for 6 folks to step up and $600 in total for this hour. And it's got to be you. It's not going to be somebody else. We need you today. 260-452-1185 is the number to call if you'd like to make your pledge of support. Or Susan Burns, they can always pledge on our Safe Secure website. It's nipr.fm. Why should people go to the phones right now?
To the phones, because there are people there waiting, including my neighbor Phil.
And we don't want to disappoint Phil. Keep,
after all the time he spent to drive up here. It's a program and a show that is really kind of unique, and it does take some money to keep the electrons flowing through the microphones and out through the tower so it can get to you. And I hope we're bringing important information to you when we do this show.
And of course, we've got lots of great thank you gifts at every level. I might suggest the $89 level that amount or more. You'll automatically receive our NIPR member card, good for 2-for-1 dining, golf, shopping, all sorts of great things across our listening area. We're going to get to that break now. Please do make your pledge of support over that break. It's easy, it's fast, and we'll get you back to the program here in just a moment. 260-452-1185 or online, it's nipr.fm. This is Midday Matters. Stay with us.
On Talk of the Nation, we like to be clear about what we're talking about, whether it's movies.
A B-movie was a movie that was made specifically to be on the bottom half of a double feature.
Or the auto industry.
One mid-level executive at a top automaker told me, well, 30 years ago, we were a car company that would occasionally lend money to our customers, and now we're a bank that makes cars.
Talk of the Nation, clear, straight, open, from NPR News. Tune in weekdays at 2 here on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
After your daily entree of TV, talk, phoning, and texting, push the envelope. Have the salad last. Toss jazz salad, that is, with me, Bob Mayer, Tuesday nights from 7 to 9 on 89.1 WBOI.
On Fresh Air, you can hear interviews that make you see the world in a new way.
Every drink of water you take, every pot of coffee you make is dinosaur pee because it's all been through the kidneys of a Tyrannosaurus rex or an Apatosaurus many, many times because all the water we have is all the water we have ever had.
You just never know what you'll learn next on Fresh Air. Join us.
Fresh Air weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
This week on Afterglow, we'll feature songs with a dream theme, including performances from Frank Sinatra, Dinah Washington, Tony Bennett, Diane Reeves, and many more. This is David Brent Johnson inviting you to tune in for our standard mix of jazz, ballads, and American popular song with Street of Dreams on Afterglow.
Afterglow is Tuesdays at 9 p.m. on WBOI.
It's 12:24. This is Midday Matters Financial Focus right here on 89.1 FM. I'm Sean Beter, very happy to be with you on this Tuesday afternoon. Riding shotgun, of course, during this Fun Drive edition of our show, it's Susan Burns. Good afternoon, Susan.
Yes, and we've got Kevin Mullett from Cirrus ABS with us and Tom Herr from Barrett and McNagney Law Firm. And we were just talking about starting to get into that world of copyright.
And I do want to put in one more plug here. This is our Fun Drive program, and we do want you to join the conversation and also maybe make a pledge if you appreciate
Indeed.
Programming like this. The number to do both, 260-452-1185, or you can always pledge your support toll-free by calling 1-800-471-9264. And Kevin Mullett, we were talking a bit over the break here about kind of a personal story or a story that you were telling recently about an image that that was taken without proper clearances.
Yeah, and so, you know, I was creating a presentation. When I'm doing that, I often have to go find supporting, material, including images. And I'm busy like other businesses and don't necessarily have all of the funds in the world to go buy stock photography. And if you're not familiar with that, there's plenty of places where you can go buy stock photography ranging from, you know, $1 per image all the way up to hundreds and even thousands of dollars per image, depending on how they're managed. But I did what a lot of businesses are doing these days, and they're relying on Creative Commons, which we mentioned earlier. The problem with Creative Commons is that you have to still verify if the person who has set that license on it actually is the copyright owner and has the rights to do so. So I go to Flickr, which is a popular photo sharing service, and I upload photos all the time myself, and I have the option to set something as Creative Commons, meaning I'm telling people, go ahead and use it. And I can set whether I want that to be for commercial use, whether I want it to be allowed for alterations to be made to it, and so forth. So I'm looking for this image based on Creative Commons, and I find one that's perfect. It says exactly what I want it to say. And I'm looking at the profile, and I realize this is not this person's image. So because I'm used to this situation, I noticed that this was not that person's image. And sure enough, if I look at what's called the EXIF data, that's EXIF data, and Flickr allows you to see that, all popular modern-day cameras set data on the images that is called metadata, and that data says the brand of the camera that was used and what location possibly, and in some situations, the copyright information can be set. So I look at the EXIF data, and it tells me the guy's name that actually created it along with his web address. I'm able to contact him. So the short of that is, just because someone has set it as Creative Commons does not mean that that individual who uploaded it had the right to set that licensing on it.
So then what'd you do?
Well, so being the geek that I am and knowing some of the tools that, and also I happen to be a photographer, uh-huh, I knew how to go find this. And so I'll give you guys a couple of tips on ways to discover this, because it's very important for you to check. Does this image actually belong here? So one of the things is the EXIF data, EXIF, and there are tools, for example, like in Google Chrome, there's a plugin that you can use where you can just click on that little bookmarklet and it'll tell you what the EXIF data is for that image. Okay. Many other browsers, you can just right click on it and it'll give you the properties of that image, but this is a quick way. You can use a service called TinEye, and that's TinEye.com. And what TinEye allows you to do is either upload an image or just put in the URL from where you see it. They also have a bookmarklet as well. And it'll say, this is 20 instances that I see of this image being used out there, and hopefully you can track it back to the original user. There's another tool called PicScout, PicScout, and that's made by the folks at Image Exchange. And what that one does, it's a little bit unique. So you go to Google and you click on image search, and you say in Google, you can say only show me Creative Commons images. This one will then go through and it will show you if there is a stock agency that sells that image, which will then, of course, now if you purchase it from an entity like that, you have some, you know, some liability removed from you because you have somebody to go back to on that. And then one more, there is pin search. So if you're fancying something you see on Pinterest, you can install pin search, and that will show you other instances of that use on Google so that you can go find it.
And it looks like we have a caller on the line, and we do want to invite you to join the conversation today, 260-452-1185, or you can always call us 1-800-471-9264. Let's go to Mike on line one. Mike, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Thank you. I want to talk about a little bit of a different topic, and that is sort of intellectual property copyright. I don't create works of art or anything tangible like that, but I have a lot of processes that I use with organizations, and I know that if I design a specific tool that helps me with the process, then I can copyright that. But what about the process itself? How much has to be tangible to be able to say this approach is copyright protected?
And Tom Hur, it sounds a little sticky in this situation. Copywriting processes instead of fixed works like books or photos, and things like that.
Well, I'd have to start with the statute, Section 102, which speaks to copyrights, and the statute specifically excludes ideas, procedures, processes, systems, methods of operation, and other things like that. So there are patents available for some of those creative works, but as far as copyright goes, it must be the fixed manifestation of those processes. If you write out a manual about how that works, that's what's protected by the copyright.
So if the process were to be written in a book form, for example, and say, here are the tools, but here's the process within which these tools are used, and it's in that kind of form, that could be protected.
If it's your original work, yes.
And Tom, how does that play in? Like, I mean, we're seeing more and more with some of these intellectual property situations where people, I mean, Amazon has one click checkout, which, to be quite honest, I think we've gotten a little bit carried away with what is allowed to be copyrightable. Could you talk to for just a second about, okay, you received a patent for something or a copyright agreement, but isn't it different whether that will actually hold up whether you'll get damages for that or whether that will really hold water?
Right. And the one that comes to mind was just last month, Apple obtained a $1 billion verdict over the look of its iPhone against Samsung. But again, I think that was patent law and not copyright law. Mm-hmm. I do not profess to be a patent attorney. I have a partner who is. He and I are both speaking at ArtLink tonight. And if you want more information about patents and patenting processes, I think you really need to hear from him. I don't profess to be proficient with patents. But certainly you can obtain a copyright on anything, a copyright registration, that is. And then where you seek to enforce those rights in a court of law, they could be challenged. They could be challenged on a number of grounds, one of which you pointed out, but, a lack of originality. In your example where the fellow tried to obtain copyright over an image someone else had created, that's, it's not his work. He can't obtain a copyright for that. And then fair use, obviously, is one we haven't really touched on yet, but that's another defense to a copyright infringement action. Did I answer your question? I was thinking of something else when you asked me.
I think whether or not you're actually going to win that award. Recently got a trademark that was dubious in nature, and there was a lot of conversation around the fact that, well, okay, you've got a fancy piece of paper that says that you spent money to get awarded that trademark, but
yeah.
It's highly unlikely that that is going to stand up in court.
And right. Mike, did we set you on the right track there anyway?
Yes, you did. That's very helpful. Thank
All
you.
Right. Thank you very much for your call. Of course, we want.
Did
more.
He pledge?
Well, perhaps we'll call back in a little bit.
He does know the right number now.
That's right. We do invite more of our listeners to join this conversation on copyright. The number to call is 260-452-1185. Of course, you can pledge on our you can comment on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/middaymatters. Send us a tweet or you can email us, middaymatters@nipr.fm. And we are going to take just a very quick break here for the news. But Susan Burns, I should give a goal update since this is the Fun Drive edition of our program. We were looking for 6 folks. 3 have stepped up so far and made their pledge of support.
Oh, we need 3 more. Come on, folks.
We thank those folks so much for being the public in public radio this hour. 3 more will get us to our goal. The number to make that pledge, it's the same as the number to get in touch, 260-452-1185. Or you can always pledge on our safe, secure website. It's nipr.fm.
Which is how I pledged, and it's just so easy. It's just a few right clicks, and I'm pretty sure it's copyright safe.
Susan Burns, thank you very much for being with us today. We'll continue the conversation on copyright when we get back. Stay with us. It's Midday Matters.
At All Things Considered, we don't just bring you the day's news. We interview actors, musicians, and artists of all stripes and take the time to understand what really drives them. We learn the story behind the story to get at the deeper truths that connect us all. I'm Audie Cornish. Stop by for your daily dose of discovery every afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered airs weekday afternoons at 4 on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Good afternoon. I'm Katie Anderson with WBOI News. Senate candidates Joe Donnelly and Richard Murdoch spent most of their first debate Monday attacking each other, while Libertarian Andrew Horning called for voters to move away from the status quo. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports.
From the very first question of the debate, Murdoch and Donnelly sparred, attacking each other's positions as much as they touted their own. Topics included tax reform, the role of government, and the future of programs like Social Security and Medicare. But throughout the entire debate, both major party candidates appealed to moderate Republicans, or the so-called Lugar Republicans. Donnelly says he's the only one with a bipartisan record.
One of the things we have to do is continue to work on jobs. It's the most critical thing of all to make sure everything goes right for our Hoosier state. And I work with Senator Lugar to make sure we saved over 100,000 auto jobs.
But Murdoch says Donnelly's attempts to paint him as someone who can't work across the aisle simply isn't true.
I wouldn't see one of the most important things I've done as state treasurer is helping to set up a college savings plan that's increased by 10 times the number of people who are now saving for college, and I worked with Democrats to do that.
Libertarian Andrew Horning says Murdoch and Donnelly's bickering is proof the system is broken and that, as an outsider, he's the only one who can change it. The three candidates will have one more debate next week. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
20 universities in the U.S. and Canada are developing plans for long-term research projects to help protect and restore the Great Lakes. WBOI's Sarah D'Elia has more.
The University of Michigan is among the participants in the collaboration, which was announced Monday. It's called the Great Lakes Futures Project. It will begin with a series of papers describing factors that have impacted the lakes over the past 50 years, and those expected to have an effect in the next 50 years. Among them are invasive species, climate change, the economy, and chemical pollution. The studies are expected to help academics, government officials, industry, and others answer big-picture questions such as how to manage watersheds. The project will also produce scholarly publications and conduct public events with schools and community groups. For WBOI News, I'm Sarah D'Elia.
Indianapolis taxpayers wondering what their property is worth might have to wait until December because of widespread errors discovered in local assessments. Marion County Assessor Joe O'Connor tells WTHR that most of the errors involve homes that were assessed an average of 20% higher than they should have been. That could force homeowners to pay higher property taxes if the errors aren't corrected. O'Connor says the state-mandated reassessment factored in updated land values, home improvements, and replacement costs, but it failed to consider sales prices for neighborhood homes, which can equalize assessments. O'Connor says his office is working to correct the errors. New assessments were due to be mailed in early November, but could be delayed up to a month. And now back to Midday Matters with your host, Sean Beter.
Minutes past the hour, it's Midday Matters Financial Focus on 89.1 FM WBOI. I'm your host, Sean Beter. Glad to be with you on this Tuesday. And this hour, Susan Burns and I are talking about copyright with Kevin Mullen and Tom Herr. Thank you guys for being with us for this program. This is the Fund Drive edition of Midday Matters Financial Focus, and that means we have a little business of our own to tend to here.
We do.
We had a goal this hour of six pledges and $600, and we're halfway there already. Thank you very much to Rosemary, to Sharon, and to David. David says, we love NPR. Thank you for providing some great brain food. Well, it's our pleasure, and thank you very much for feeding
food?
This operation.
It
yes.
is, and you know that, which reminds me of a couple of the incentives that we have going, and one of them, of course, you've heard several times about the green bean delivery, and I would like to vouch for not only brain food but tummy food that provides. And then the one that I checked, I mentioned earlier, I went online to do my renewing, and I love Newsweek magazine. And thanks to being a member of NPR and NIPR, I get a subscription to that. And all I had to do was check that one little box in the online part of things. And then this year, if you're at the right level for it, there's a combination deal. So it's a long segue here, Sean, but you can get the Newsweek and then a jute tote bag to carry your vegetables in.
And that's for your pledge of just $10 a month. It's a really small impact on most folks' budgets, but it makes
is.
A huge deal to us here. We'd love to hear from a few folks at that $10 per month level, or if you just like to give it a lump sum, $120 a year, that's fine. You'll get that great incentive. And the green bean delivery incentive, if all this wasn't enough, we have this partnership with Green Bean Delivery, and they'll donate 3 meals worth of fresh produce to Community Harvest Food Bank's Farm Wagon program, which helps alleviate hunger for families in northeastern Indiana. Please don't wait any longer to make your pledge of support to Public Radio. 260-452-1185, or you can always pledge online at nipr.fm. So what do we have there, Susan? We've got the Green Bean Delivery Partnership serving our community.
Fresh and healthy.
We have some fantastic thank you gifts for those who choose to pledge this hour.
A tote bag that provides a nice little statement of identity with the iHeart Public Radio aspect of it.
That's right. And of course, you're supporting local voices, local programming in your community. Shows like this don't just pop out of the air, as much as cool as that would be. It takes support, and it takes a lot of work, and it takes you. So please make your pledge of support right now, looking for 3 folks to make the difference this hour. Once again, 260-452-1185 or nipr.fm. And thanks so much to everybody who supported us so far throughout this fun drive. Now let's get back to the topic at hand. And we do want to invite our listeners, if maybe they've already pledged or are going to pledge later and want to get in on the conversation, sure, they can give us a call at 1-800-471-9264. Or you can email us, middaymatters@nipr.fm. And Tom Herr, I want to start with you in this next segment of the program. We were talking a bit over the break about fair use and how often it seems like artists and others use fair use as a way to use images, use other work that they may not otherwise be entitled to. Tell us a little bit about what fair use is.
Well, fair use are the first words out of your mouth as soon as someone accuses you of copyright infringement. So it's almost like your Miranda rights. It's fair use. The statute, federal statute, copyright statute, speaks to fair use, and it's comprised of 4 elements. The purpose of the use, this is the infringing use, the person who's been accused of infringement, whether it's for profit or educational, for example. The second element is the nature of the work being infringed. The third element is the amount of the work used from the entire work that's being infringed. And then the fourth is the effect on the marketplace. In other words, what is the effect on the copyright holder's market? How much money is he losing as a result of this infringing use? I mean, I don't have time to explain each one of these elements, but let me give an example that might be pertinent to what you do here at the station. I open up the newspaper today, and there's this great picture of Peyton Manning walking off the field last night after one of those historic comeback wins. And I know Indiana fans don't like to hear about Peyton anymore now that he's a different kind of horse, a Bronco instead of a Colt.
I still like Peyton. I'll stay behind him.
Clearly, that's fair use. Why is that fair use? Because it's news. You're a news organization. You can put pictures you take of a fire scene with a little girl standing there crying. I mean, that's fair use. It's news. Could I take that picture from the newspaper, assuming it were mine, and turn it into a magazine, a slick magazine with Peyton on the cover, and make a lot of money because everybody loves Peyton? No, that's not news. That's just entertainment. It's a different kind of use, and you're exploiting his image. And I mean, there's all other rights involved, licensing rights and that sort of thing. But that's one distinction that's worth remembering for people in the news business.
And this doesn't just extend, theoretically anyway, doesn't just extend to the news business, but also folks like Jon Stewart or the editorial team at The Onion as well, the funny guys.
Yeah, there are other issues besides I think Stewart would say he does the news. He's a comedian, but he does relevant topics. And I think for the most part, the people whose intellectual property he's using like the publicity. I mean, that's the thing nowadays. The New York Times, when the internet first started and people were linking to the Times, they sent out these cease and desist letters, stop linking. Not anymore. I mean, everybody wants to be linked. Everybody wants hits. Everybody wants to have people's eyes driven to their site. So you don't run into those kind of complaints anymore when they're just using, a few seconds or a few, not showing the entire show, obviously, but using parts of it for parody, for making fun of whatever. it promotes the show. I mean, someone once said, all publicity is good. It doesn't matter if it's bad or good.
Hey, Kevin Muller.
Yeah, I think the danger there is for businesses, when you have a blog post, because we are talking about copyright, which includes the written word as well. And so if you have a blog post and you've gone and you say, wow, this guy has a really great blog post, the portion of one of the elements that Tom referred to, which is how much of it that you grab, if you take the entirety of an article that I've written and you put it on your blog post and then you say, oh, well, Kevin will love that because I'm linking back to him. But the question is this, the fourth part that he talked about was how much does it remove the viability of my original article? So if you have stated the entirety of the article that I wrote, whether you link back to me or not is irrelevant because you've already stated the entirety of the post. Fair use is supposed to say, in order to talk about what Kevin wrote about, you have to be able to at least explain or surmise a little bit of what he said to put context to it. And that's what you're doing in news as well, as you're saying, we heard about Peyton Manning's comeback. We have to refer to some of it. And there was this great thing that Stewart said about it. Well, you have to mention John Stewart. You might even have to use a picture of John Stewart to comment on that. But from a business standpoint, they got to be very careful about getting the idea. They can just go grab a whole portion of somebody's article and slap it on their blog and say, well, you want the click, so, you know, it's good.
So yeah. when the NFL comes on with a graphic in the middle of, say, a Broncos game that says, you can't use any images, any sound, any descriptions of this game without the express written consent of the National Football League, that's how, folks like, say, WBOI or the New York Times, some organization like that would get away with it.
Right. Think of it this way. Someone once wrote a book about everything important you've learned in kindergarten or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, in grade school, you had to write term papers. Well, you were taught the difference between footnoting a quote and plagiarizing. I mean, that's basically, I think, the example Kevin was talking about. You take an entire article, that's plagiarism. You cite that article, you take a quote or two or a paragraph from it and cite it. That's fair use.
Hmm. And you're
not diminishing the value of that original work. I mean, mm-hmm. people still want to go back to that original work and read the rest of it.
Yeah, and I think, again, the danger is that, and we briefly touched on the company that had purchased old copyright before, is, you know, the danger is how much you put in there, and even commenting on other people's work, the length of which that you do that can put you in jeopardy. So from a business standpoint, you know, we tell people to be very careful about that, because just because you can and just because you think that it adds value to that other person does not mean that you have the express written consent to do that.
Yeah. Does not mean you're right.
Does not mean you're right. I mean, you know, getting away with something and for a while only works until you stop getting away with it.
And just to illustrate this point in another way, very briefly here, we were talking before we came on the air for this segment of the program. This is something you can see pretty readily in music, as some of the most popular music of the last 20 years features samples from other artists. And you mentioned the Two Live Crew case.
Yeah, that was the Acuff Music, a Supreme Court case where Roy Orbison's Pretty Woman or Oh Pretty Woman was sampled by Two Live Crew. And they, there's a lot of criticism of that decision because, any songwriter will tell you there sometimes are just a few, small parts of a song, the hook or whatever, that make it the song that it is. And you take that hook out, you've taken the whole song. But in that case, the defendants, Two Live Crew, were able to convince the court that they were making a parody of the simplicity of Oh Pretty Woman in their song, which I guess I'm not all that familiar with. It was more complex. So they prevailed. But I don't think a lot of people have criticized that decision.
And so as an example of fair use, if we were to play the two versions right now. That would be fair use because we'd be illustrating what you just talked about.
I don't think you
about.
Could play them in their entirety without paying a license fee.
I think
a portion. I'm not going to back you on that one, Susan.
Okay.
Maybe you can play a few seconds. Yeah. Right? You can play that loop or that hook.
Yeah. We do want to hear from our listeners today. If you have a question or comment for our panelists in the last few minutes of the program here, give us a call and ask or just share your thoughts. The number is 260-452-1185. Of course, you can always post on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/MiddayMatters. Or you can send us a tweet. It's at Midday Matters. And I should put in just a really quick plug here. This is our Fun Drive program. Those same numbers and our website, nipr.fm, will help keep us on the air for another year. So please make your pledge of support at any amount. We're looking for just 3 more people to pledge right now. Again, that number, 260-452-1185. Or you can always pledge on our website. It's nipr.fm. And it looks like we have another caller on the line here. So let's open up the phones and go to Fred. Fred on line 1. Good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Greetings. I have a question related to a website which references numerous other articles that we link people to. In other words, a person visits the United States, makes multiple visits, multiple reports, often the same speech. How do we provide on our website links to those others without violating any type of copyright problem?
The linking, if basically what you're doing is linking, as in aggregating information, based on a search criteria or providing the link, then it's highly unlikely that you're going to fall under, any copyright issues. And even Google had to go and say, hey, look, if we're pointing to other people's websites, are we actually infringing on that? And the government decided they are not. But we're back to this fair use, is if you start to then provide snippets of information to tell people what's on the other end, then it's the quantity, as Tom had alluded to earlier or spoke to earlier, it's the quantity that you put on each one of those, and does that destroy that other site's viability to monetize their information. The other thing I'll add in real quickly too is do you add value to the list? So in other words, if you just create a list and somebody else has that exact same list, have you augmented that list in such a way as to provide additional value to the viewer of your page? So you've commented on it. We think that this link is, we think this site has the best of this. We think that this site has a good quality of this. Have you added something to that list that's qualitative?
And it also depends on what you're linking to. Keep in mind, we haven't talked about public domain, but for example, on my law firm's website, barrettlaw.com, we link to the Copyright Office. We link to the Secretary of State's office. We link to some of the local city and county government offices. Those are all in the public domain, and you can incorporate all or any part of those websites without any problem at all.
Yeah, just to clarify on that, a link on the internet, clarify this, Tom, is you're talking about the information that is on those sites, because if you put a site on the web, that is public, and the onus would be on you to protect your site if you don't want people to see the contents of your site. You can't.
Right.
Yeah, so
that would be sort of like a membership requirement to gain access.
Exactly.
And there's also, we haven't talked about the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, DMCA, which you'll see a lot. And it provides what's called a safe harbor. So if someone does object to something on your site, they have to give you, a chance to get it off of there. And, I mean, it's like, I think, things like eBay or these big sites that have people post things that they don't really know about. And I think YouTube is another one. Someone will post a copyrighted song. Well, the owner of that song can't just file suit against YouTube. They've got to go through some steps, and YouTube does have an opportunity to take it down. And as long as they comply with these pretty easy to understand steps, they'll be okay.
Excellent, and you know, very, very useful and timely. Thank you.
Fred, thank you very much for your call. And gentlemen, gosh, it seems like we've barely gotten started here, but already we're reaching the end of this program. Thanks very much to Fred and to everybody who called in and shared their thoughts today. And Kevin Mullett and Tom Herr, thank you very much for being with us as well.
Well, thank you, Sean.
We appreciate the opportunity to come on here and share, and we appreciate the availability of this service to be able to provide this to people. And so if you might note, I'm subtly trying to get into the fact that I think...
We call that a pivot.
I'm a firm believer in contributing to this awesome resource that we have in Fort Wayne. And so I would encourage people to pick up the phone and give us a call.
All right. And we're sorry. I know we had a few more folks on the phones that we were not able to get to today, but we did want to take just a few minutes at the end of the program here to give a quick goal update. It looks like we've had four folks pledge their support to public radio so far. If you have a little bit of time and can chip in, we'd love to hear from you just in the last few minutes of this program. Now's your big chance. Before we go on to Fresh Air, show your support for local voices, for local radio, for public radio at large. 260-452-1185, or you can always make your pledge online at nipr.fm. And Susan mentioned it earlier. I'll mention it again because it's one of my favorite incentives, because it's a combo gift. You get a little bit more for your money. For your just pledge of just $10 per month or $120 for the year, you can request one of our combo gifts, a one-year subscription to Newsweek magazine, and your choice now of either the iHeart Public Radio Jute tote bag, which Susan mentioned, or you can get Newsweek and our new NIPR drink koozie. And that's actually made by a local business here in Fort Wayne called Keepsake Threads. And we appreciate their partnership as well. That's for your pledge of just $10 a month or $120 per year to NIPR.fm. Or 452-1185.
We've got a koozie here, and it looks like it would fit just really well around some of those NIPR mugs and glasses that you've gotten in the past.
I would say it's just about perfect. Whatever level you pledge at, we really want to hear from you today.
We do.
We just need two more folks to go to the phones right now and pledge their support for public radio and for Midday Matters. 260-452-1185 or NIPR.fm. And Susan, we have that additional incentive we're talking about over the course of the drive.
We also
as well
mentioned it, and it's the green bean delivery. If you call in and make any kind of a pledge, as I understand it, Sean, you get green bean delivery. We'll deliver food to the food bank.
That's right. For each and every pledge we get over the course of this fall fund drive, they'll donate 3 full meals of fresh produce to the Community Harvest Food Bank's Farm Wagon program. So not only are you strengthening the fabric of our community through your pledge to public radio, you're also helping to serve those in need.
And I would like to just point out, Green Bean Delivery is a new business started by some folks who grew up within our listening area in Grant County.
And we're supporting local businesses, local partnerships, local people in a lot of different ways today. We have to get on to Fresh Air. One more time, that number, 260-452-1185, NIPR.fm. Thanks for your support. Thanks to our guests, and thank you, Susan.